Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
This is live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy from the Hitting Tillers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
This court's now set to be seated, please.
Your Honor, for the purpose of the record, we return back to the trial of Commonwealth versus Lindsay Clancy. All parties are present, including the defendant and including the 18 jurors.
All right. Attorney Reddington?
Thank you. So I now have, sir, Exhibit 220, which would be the records from the Women and Infants Hospital that you read prior to coming in here today, correct?
Yes.
And when you read the records, would you agree with me, sir, that there was a history of present illness, which means they would ask Lindsay questions about how she felt, what her medications were, things like that, right?
Yes, I would.
And when you were reviewing this, did you note that she indicated that she was feeling, and I quote, because it's in quotes, crazy, depressed, numb to all emotion, end quote, quote, can't feel love, end quote. Quote, my life is becoming a disaster, end quote. You saw those?
Are you quoting from the records or from my report?
Records, Exhibit 220.
Okay, yes, I would agree that those were words that were used when I reviewed the records.
And when you were talking with Lindsay, did you ask her what she meant by saying she can't feel love?
Yes, she said that she felt like a shell. She felt hollow. She felt like a zombie. She felt emotionally flat as a pancake, which is also one of the phrases that was used in those records to describe her mood.
Okay. My life is becoming a disaster, quote, can't feel fear, end quote. What did that mean? Did you ask anything like that? Can't feel fear.
I didn't ask her specifically about can't feel fear. She indicated that she was having, she couldn't feel things emotionally. That
so. Worried that she is, quote, messed up beyond repair, end quote. That was in the records, correct?
That was several places, yes, including the records.
Quote, takes all the effort in the world just to breathe, end quote. That was in the records, correct?
Yes.
And in the interviews of friends and family, would you agree in this time frame, which was in December to the end of December, that she was having difficulty even getting out of bed?
Yes.
She felt very heavy. She couldn't even walk. She had difficulty with her personal hygiene, correct?
Yes.
Was worried about how she's going to take care of her kids and feed them and watch them while Patrick was working, right?
Yes.
And one of her goals, and I quote, was to come off meds and be able to sleep, end quote.
Yes.
Now, insomnia, you agree with me, is very serious.
So, I would absolutely agree with you, yes.
And that can lead to any number of things, right?
Yes.
Can even lead to psychosis, right?
Yes.
Okay. I asked you about the treatment plan and recommendations that the district attorney had asked you about as well. And if I may, and if you need to look at it, let me know. It says treatment plan admit to DHP. Do you know what DHP is?
No.
Okay. Medication recommended tapering off Seroquel, starting with 200 milligrams tonight and follow up with outpatient provider. That would be who? Gelada?
At the time, it could have been Gelada or Tufts.
And then indicating, sir, that diagnosis that we talked about, if I may approach, can you read number one and two?
Number one is GAD, which stands for generalized anxiety disorder. Number two is depression, unspecified, rule out due to adverse drug effects.
So when you rule out and have a concern about adverse drug effects, one of the things that I imagine one would do is to reach out to the person that's prescribing the drugs, right?
It's possible. There could be other strategies as well. You could change the medication. You could discontinue it. There could be a number of things.
And when you read the record, sir, again, page 9 on the treatment plan, did you make note of the fact, and I quote, "Of note, we attempted to reach current outpatient provider Rebecca Gelada, NP, but did not receive a call back." You see that?
I may have seen that. I didn't note it in what I wrote here.
In any event, patient plans to reach out to previous provider who would be Jennifer Tufts, and she did that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, one of the other things that you had made reference to, sir, is that you relied on, is when her husband came home and found Lindsay on the ground in the snow after she had jumped out the window, he spoke with her, is what you told this jury, right?
Yes.
And can you tell us again what it is that he said to her and what she said to him?
He said, "What did you do?" And she said, "I tried to kill myself." And then he said, "Where are the kids?" And she said, "In the basement."
Now, what is your source of that information, sir?
It was in the records, and I also did a collateral interview with Patrick Clancy.
Did you listen to the 911 tape?
No, I did not.
If I tell you, would you be surprised, sir, that she had significant damage, not only to her back, her spine, and was hemorrhaging, but also to her throat?
No, I would not be surprised. She injured herself very badly when she jumped out that window.
If I suggest to you, sir, that if you listen to the 911 tape as it relates to Patrick Clancy interacting with her, that she can only make grunting noises, would you be surprised at that?
I would be surprised, yes.
And you never listened to that tape?
I did not.
Went into McLean Hospital. And that would be the locked wards of McLean Hospital. She was there for 5 days, correct?
That's correct.
And then she was released at her request to attend Cora's birthday, right?
Yes.
When she was released, would you agree, sir, that while she was there, she continued to describe her mood as numb, denying things like that she's not having hallucinations and suicidal thoughts or homicidal thinking at the time? And that would be prior to her discharge. Is that right?
There was a lot in that question. So if you could break it down for me, I'd appreciate it.
No, I'm just going to ask, sir, if would you agree with me that she indicated what her mood was prior to discharge, right? Well, as a doctor, you're not going to let somebody walk out the door of a locked ward in a hospital without making sure that, in your opinion, that it's okay for the person to be released to their home, family, things of that nature, right?
I'm looking at the part of my report.
Can you understand my question? I don't care about your report. I'm asking you about when someone is in a hospital, you don't release them unless you feel they're not a danger to themselves or others, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The answer to that question is yes.
And she was released, right? From the hospital.
Yes.
And she then was allowed to go home and go to her daughter Cora's birthday, right?
That's correct.
And this was on January 5?
January 5, yes.
And she was described in the records as being cooperative and pleasant, right?
Cooperative, pleasant, no psychosis, no suicidal or homicidal ideation, mood described as good, in quotes, and not anxious.
Good for you. Anything else you want to add?
Objection. That's sustained. Next question.
So after discharge, would you agree, sir, that she had what she described as a small shred of hope after discharge because she thought that she was off the Seroquel and felt that was what was causing her a lot of her problems, right?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay. But the intrusive, suicidal ideation and thoughts returned. Isn't that right?
Within a week, yes.
And they were pretty bad, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
And again, she's describing, according to your testimony yesterday, symptomology that you said of combined 2 and 3. That would be on the little diagram you put up on the board, right, for the jurors to look at, the blue thing that you had with the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7?
The PowerPoint slide, yes.
Right. So you combine 2 and 3 on the slide, but you talked about this before, is what you indicate, and this is after she started taking the medication. Anxiety didn't get better. She had difficulty, great difficulty, with insomnia, and that she was numb, right? Yet again.
Yes.
Right? Kind of zombie, yet again, right?
Yes.
And she didn't see any improvement. Is that right, sir?
No, that's not right.
Okay, well, quote, in fact, she thought it was getting a lot worse. And so basically what she thought is that the symptoms that she was experiencing following taking the medications prescribed beginning in October, she said the symptoms were getting worse, particularly new symptoms, which were insomnia. It's page 126 of your testimony.
Okay.
I
misunderstood your question.
That's all right. No problem.
Sorry.
It's okay. And then you further indicated that, moving on to number 5, on your chart, one of the things she also said is that she was focusing on making the anxiety, helping the anxiety getting better through medication, right?
Yes.
It was also counseling. She went to the counseling through Latasha Dukes. Miss Gelada was still treating her, correct?
The counseling was limited, but yes, that is correct. She was involved in some counseling.
So it was limited. Is that a bad thing? Did this woman not want to go to anybody that would help her, sir? Are you trying to tell the jury that she was avoiding help?
Sustained. Next question.
So it was limited? How was it limited?
It was short-term and supportive, as opposed to something where in the field you might pick a cognitive behavioral therapist, which is empirically supported for things like anxiety and depression and patience and things like that.
Who makes that decision? Does a person like this make that decision, sir? Is it up to the patient to make a decision of cognitive, whatever it is you just said?
Yes, it's certainly one of the things that an individual can do is looking for a referral from somebody who would be a cognitive behavior therapist or something like that. So, yes.
Go ahead. I don't want to cut you off.
I'm finished.
She was focusing on trying to make this anxiety and make her feelings about her feelings go away. She wanted to be herself again, right?
Yes, that's right.
Now, there's nothing wrong with that, right, for a person to want to do that?
Not at all.
Okay. You indicated that she was concerned about resolving her problems, and the district attorney then asked you about if this is some type of her taking control of her life. You indicated that she is trying to take control of her life. Remember that?
I testified that it was important that she felt in control and that she could make things happen and improve things through focusing and discipline and hard work.
And that's what you've already agreed, that she was a person that wasn't afraid of hard work, right?
Yeah, on the contrary, she worked hard and she got a lot of results from work.
So that's not an issue that would be something that would be a black mark against her, that she's trying to take control of her life as it relates to these medications and what they're doing to her and her internal feelings of postpartum, if that's what she believed?
I was not trying to develop black marks against her. I was just trying to describe how
you
she
said
thinks and feels and behaves.
Sorry, you're right.
All right. Next question.
I thought you said yesterday that, you know, you put 2 marks over this category, 3 marks over this category. This is possible. That's possible. You were considering these things, right?
That was on another issue.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as it relates to resolving the problems, that would include talking to doctors about different medications to try, researching medications on her own. This is your testimony. Asking friends and family for tips. Really? You're supposed to ask friends and family for tips about your mental psychosis, your mental state?
I'm not sure what the question is.
Well, Dr. Helbrun testified yesterday as it relates to, in response to questions from the district attorney about her resolving her problems, including talking to doctors about different medications to try, researching medications on her own, and asking friends and family for tips.
Objection, is there a question?
Yeah, the question is that good medical advice, sir, to tell a sick person who comes to a doctor for help to go ask their friends and family for tips?
One of the things I would say is that when you want very much to improve, you, of course, ask your doctor and whoever else you're working with, but you might also ask other people in the family or friends any recommendations that they might have. That's sort of something that you do.
And when you say sort of something you do, what are you referring to? The women that come to a doctor in the postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis, and ask for help, that they should go talk to their neighbors?
I think that one of the things that's kind of a natural human inclination is to talk to people who are close to you, friends and family and so on, and say, this is a problem I'm having. Do you have any advice, or can you help in any way?
And then over the course of the time that she was going through this experience into late January, she had a lot of providers offer a lot of diagnoses, and there were a lot of complicated considerations, so much so that the diagnosis that was given to her, being at that time adjustment disorder with anxiety and depressions, generalized anxiety disorder, major depressive disorder, bipolar disorder 2, postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis, postpartum stress disorder. Those are your words, sir.
Yes.
And that was all in January, wasn't it? Right? Stop saying no.
Are you asking me whether she had all the symptoms of all those disorders in January?
Your word, sir, for late January.
Objection. If we could have the question and the response.
Yeah, good. Next question. Good.
Did I just read right what you said in your testimony yesterday?
I'm not understanding your question, Mr. Reddington.
She also had psychotropic medication with adverse reaction. Your words to this jury yesterday.
Yes.
What is psychotropic medication with adverse reaction? What does that mean?
It's pronounced psychotropic. Okay. It's psychotropic medication is medication that is prescribed to help treat symptoms of mental or emotional disorder. And it helps to improve, hopefully, the symptoms that you experience. And there was another part to your question, I think.
Yeah, it's called adverse.
Yes. These medications are available because for what they're prescribed for, they help most people. They have to go through clinical trials and all sorts of things. But for a few people, there are side effects and what we call adverse reactions, and they don't help. In fact, they might make things worse. And it appeared to me from reviewing the records that for Ms. Clancy, she's one of those few people where the reactions were very different, very poor, they were not the kind of reactions that were designed to have the medication prescribed for and improve the symptoms. She just had sort of the opposite happen.
Look at her. You look at her, sir. Did she have adverse reactions in your mind after you evaluated her, looked at the medical records, and looked at all of the scripts that she had? Do you believe that she had adverse reactions?
Sustained as the form.
Do you believe that she had adverse reactions?
To the medication that she had been prescribed since September?
Did she have adverse reactions, sir, up to the time of late January when you had no problem answering questions for the DA yesterday. Did she have adverse reactions into late January?
I believe she was having adverse reactions from the time she began taking the medication in October up to and including January.
Do you think that the treatment that she got from Tufts and Gelada was good?
Objection.
No, overruled.
I don't know. That's not something that I evaluated as part of my evaluation of Ms. Clancy.
You testified yesterday that she was returning to exercising in December. And then the district attorney followed up and indicated, well, she went to the Kingsbury Club in December. Remember that question?
I don't, actually.
No? Do you know what the Kingsbury Club is? It sounds pretty fancy.
I don't, actually.
Do you know that it's just an exercise place with a pool? You can bring your kids? A little restaurant?
Once again, I don't know what the Kingsbury Club is.
Well, there's no problem with a woman trying to exercise to try to avoid drugs and try to get herself out of any depressed state that she might be in after having a baby, right? No problem with that.
On the contrary, it's a good idea if she can do it, and it's something that she used exercise all her life.
That's right.
To help manage her mood and do better.
One of the questions the DA asked you yesterday is about the manic state, or hypomanic state, exercise, or things of that nature. And you answered that she did some exercise. Well, she did more than some exercise right after having Callie, didn't she?
She did.
What did she do?
She got up at 4 a.m. She ran 3 miles. She did half an hour on the Peloton, did an exercise class. So she was doing a fair amount of exercise.
How about a road race shortly after she had the baby?
Yes, it's my understanding that she did that too, yes.
During that period of time while she's exercising and running and road races and all the rest, sir, would you agree, sir, that coincided with the same time that they were involved with the height, with the cleaning out of the garage and removing property and selling things? Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Agree that at the same time she was doing the beach blanket bingo or whatever it is on television where she's selling people things like videos and lost money doing it?
Would I agree what?
Would you agree that she was selling videos online and it turned out that it was a scam and she lost her money?
I would agree that she was involved in something like that. I didn't know
okay,
that she
so
lost
we have
her money.
The exercise. We have the scam, we have the hypocleaning, all of that. Would you agree that that is just a little bit indicative of what you said to this jury that you were struggling over, trying to find mania, manic, hypomania? Agree with that?
I would agree that those could be symptoms of a manic episode, which I was having a hard time identifying as she was clearly experiencing something like that, but I did end up with a diagnosis of bipolar 2, and that reflected my thinking that some of those things that Mr. Reddington has just described could be symptoms of a manic disorder, although less serious than a bipolar 1 diagnosis.
Okay. District Attorney asked you about anxiety that you felt that she was suffering. Your answer was, well, if it works...
Justin, will you meet approach sidebar?
Sure. Yeah, counsel.
So, District Attorney asked you a question yesterday, sir, and it was in reference to doing things, and I quote, like exercise to complement medication and therapy. And your answer, and I quote, well, if it works, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work for some people. It and the use effectively over the course of their lives, particularly if they have anxiety that might not fully need treatment, but it's something that might interfere your life a little bit. What did you mean by that?
I mean that exercise is something that isn't useful for managing anxiety for some people, but for other people it's quite useful.
Okay. In reference to determination as to a manic episode,
thank you.
your response, sir, was that there were times when she felt, as she described it, after the birth of different children, she felt good. She felt on top of the world. She felt really close to them, her husband and her kids and so on. But it's also something that it didn't look like a manic episode so much that it looked like she was feeling good and getting back into exercise and stuff.
Yes.
That was your answer yesterday. Is that in reference to the struggle that you had to try to get to a manic episode? That's what you said yesterday, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the answer is yes.
Can I ask him off the transcript for her? She can come in?
I'd like to meet her first.
Okay.
Thank you.
When you were talking with her in Tewksbury, either you or the other guy in the hospital interviewing her one of those 3 days.
Yes.
Let me back up. Would you agree with me, sir, that if a person has a memory while they're in a psychosis, that it's very possible that they could be imagining that they did something, but in fact, the facts, objective facts, would show she didn't?
Possible that being in an actively psychotic condition could affect the way information is processed, okay, and therefore could affect the accuracy of their memory.
So, for example, she told you that after she slashed her wrists and after she tried to slit her throat, that she used the knife to cut the screen before she threw herself out the window, right?
Yes.
Was the screen cut?
I understand that it was not.
Did that give you pause?
There are a number of things that I don't think are all that important in terms of memory difficulties and accuracy of memory, and that was one of them.
Do you recall this morning indicating that you recounted that Lindsay told you that she felt, quote, like it wasn't her, end quote, as though she were watching herself commit the killings and that she was simply responding to the voice rather than consciously deciding what to do? Do you remember saying that this morning?
I do, sir? Yes.
Would you agree that that description is consistent, almost black-letter definition, with profound disassociation?
My testimony was...
No. Is that, sir, consistent with profound disassociation?
No, it is consistent...
So the answer is no. The answer is no?
Well, I was about to give the rest
of the answer.
I'm
sure you were, but the answer is no, is what you're saying, right? I just read to you what you testified to this jury this morning, right? Did I?
You used...
Hello? Did I read what your words were this morning?
I don't remember exactly what my words were this morning.
If Dr. Halbrin told this jury that when Lindsay was talking to you and or Mac in the hospital, she felt, and I quote, like it wasn't her, as though she were watching herself commit the killings and that she was simply responding to the voice rather than consciously deciding what to do, end quote. Question is, would you agree, sir, that watching oneself is consistent with disassociation?
Disassociation that is peritraumatic, which is what I testified.
So the answer is yes?
Well, you said profound dissociation, so the answer was no.
Last time I knocked out profound. I'm just asking.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
With disassociation.
It is consistent with peritraumatic dissociation.
Okay.
Yes.
And briefly, what is disassociation?
Dissociation is sort of the sense that you are removed from yourself. You're not feeling like yourself. It's something like you're in a position where you, your sense of time and your sense of self are altered, and it's also the sort of thing where you don't feel as if it's you anymore. Sometimes you feel as though you're watching a body that's you, but it's not really you.
And at disassociation, you'd agree, in the DSM, using that book, is in fact defined as an altered mental state. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And would you agree with me that in your evaluations of Lindsay, after you guys had the chance to speak to her and consider all of the documentation, your opinion ended up, using your words, being in your mind two possible explanations? We talked about that, right?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And then you indicated that there were some possible things that made me believe that there was severe mental illness involved, right?
Yes, there were.
And there was severe mental illness involved, right?
There were some possible things that made me think that it might have been a psychotic episode.
Right, but there were severe mental illnesses involved here, right?
Yes, there were.
Okay.
It's just a question of which kind.
Semantics.
Yes.
You talked about thought broadcasting, right?
Yes,
I did. And thought broadcasting, sir, would be if somebody hears a voice and is concerned that somebody else might have heard it, right?
No.
Hey,
thought broadcasting.
So what thought broadcasting is. Are you aware that Lindsay Clancy indicated to anybody that she was hearing or having these intrusive thoughts in her mind? Yes or no?
Yes.
Did she indicate that she was afraid people could read her mind or knew what these thoughts were or whatever they were in her mind, intrusive thoughts?
She was afraid of that, and so one of the reasons that I asked her about the difference between hallucinations...
All right, sure. Hold on, please.
I can't be more clear.
All right. And then if the Commonwealth wants to follow up, they'll be able to do that.
All right.
Go ahead. Okay.
Did she, according to Dr. Helburn's review, all the interviews, in all the hours of talking,
yes,
determine that she was afraid that people could read her thoughts or knew what her intrusive dark thoughts were?
Yes.
Who did she say that to? Not just who?
Well, she said it to me.
Okay.
She said it to Dr. Mack.
Yeah, I'm sure she said it to Mack, too. Put you guys aside. Who else, like people, normal people, did she say that to? Not that you're not normal, but I mean people like friends or family or citizens or whatever.
I believe she said it to Patrick.
Okay.
And she may have said it to others as well.
She may have said it to others as well.
This I don't remember who else she said it to, but she said it to Patrick.
Well, how can you come in here and testify about a young lady that is saying to people that she's having thoughts that are intrusive and dark and that she's worried that other people are reading her mind and know about it, and you don't even know who she said it to?
Objection.
No, overruled.
One of the things that she said is that she, her thoughts were kind of intrusive and loud and, I mean, that sort of thing. And one of the things that she said was that she thought that because of that, other people might be hearing them or might know what they were.
Like even worried about dropping little Cora off at the school, and she was afraid that the teachers could hear her voices or thoughts. Read that.
I did read that, and that's one of the reasons I asked her for the difference.
Right, but when I asked you if there were any... So that refreshed your memory, that there was another person that she was concerned about.
Yes, I believe that's right, yes.
How about her friends? Do you recall her telling her friends that she was worried about the teachers being able to read her thoughts?
I do not.
You indicated yesterday that one of the concerns or one of the issues or possibilities was at the time of the killings was acute psychosis, right?
I thought one of the possible explanations...
Is that, I don't want to let you run off, sir.
No, counsel, next question.
Do you agree, sir, that you testified yesterday that at the time of the killings, one of the possible concerns that you had was whether or not there was an acute psychosis?
One of the possible explanations for her motivation and her state.
So the answer is yes, right?
Objection.
No, overruled.
That's what you said yesterday, right?
Not exactly the way you phrased it, and that's what I'm responding to.
Thank you.
Yesterday, sir, you were asked, the next part of the evidence or what you saw against acute psychosis, and you referenced his discussion of whether this was postpartum. So let's stop there for a minute. Again, you know that postpartum is not a diagnosis, right?
I do know that, yes.
Okay. But the reason that it was not, as you put it, postpartum is because she was about 8 months away from having given birth to Calvin, right?
Yes.
And most of the explanations from the authorities, like DSM-5, would point to maybe 1 month after birth, or maybe give a little bit, maybe 2 months after birth, or something like that. That's what you said yesterday.
Yes.
And what's that based on in Dr. Heldman's mind? What's that cut off about? 1 month, maybe two?
It's based on what DSM-5 says, or the Cleveland Clinic actually said 6 to 8 weeks, if you look at their website. So it's based on accepted authority within the field.
Uh-huh. Is the World Health Organization accepted authority in the field?
It's one accepted authority, yes.
Okay, and what do they say?
I don't know what they say.
But would you be surprised if I told you they say up to a year that a woman can be experiencing postpartum psychosis or postpartum depression up to a year or even longer?
There are different kinds of outcomes and time periods that different organizations use.
I'm not asking about outcomes and time periods. I'm asking about the World Health Organization cutoff for a woman with postpartum depression or psychosis. What's the time frame?
Well, I don't know.
And then you indicated, now, it could be something else, and there was certainly some stuff that I saw that were symptoms of depression and other sorts of things that she experienced in January, but it was, given the time, it was less likely, I thought, to be postpartum. What did you mean by that?
I meant that she was 8 months after giving birth to Callan, and if you look at two sources of authority, which I relied on, the DSM-5 and the Cleveland Clinic, then neither one of those would suggest that postpartum was the more likely explanation as opposed to something else.
So, if we put aside the DSM, when was the DSM? Strike that. Would you agree that the DSM virtually only mentions the whole concept of postpartum psychosis, postpartum depression in two paragraphs?
I would agree that they don't consider it to be a mental diagnosis in the same sense that other diagnostic areas are described in that manual.
Okay. Think that should change?
Objection.
No, overall.
Do I think it should change?
Yeah, you.
The way I look at this is that the DSM-5 and the Cleveland Clinic and the World Health Organization reflect different outcomes, and I think that one of the things that they do on the conservative end is they reflect something that is basically a month or 2 months, and one something else on the very extended end is a good bit longer. I think it depends on a number of things in terms of how it changes, and I'm not in a position to to offer informed opinion on that, really.
Obviously.
Objection.
It'll be stricken.
Doctor, if Miss Clancy had a genuine command hallucination, which in fact did cause her to feel compelled to carry out the killing of her children.
Yes.
In herself. Would you agree that she lacks substantial capacity to conform her conduct to the requirements of the law? That was a genuine command hallucination that she believed?
That would depend on a number of things. It would depend, for example...
Let's not go through a number of things. So your answer is no?
And my answer would be it depends.
Okay, so it depends.
Next question.
Would you agree, sir, that in December of 2022... and she told you that at that time frame she had these thoughts that were in her head that would, quote, pop into her head, intrusive thoughts that included that her brain was damaged and that she had to kill herself. And she told you that, right?
She did.
Do you believe that she was telling you the truth, sir?
Yes.
I stand corrected in one regard, sir. This morning I started off my questions by asking you about 49 years ago when you published an article on postpartum psychosis, and you agreed you were in college or something. But in fact, it was not postpartum psychosis. It was about schizophrenia, wasn't it?
I'd have to think back 49 years, but I think that's right, yes.
You transcripts of interviews with 32 schizophrenic patients, 15 male, 17 female, all with primary or secondary paranoid symptomology, were edited only to delusion-relevant material. Does that refresh your memory, sir?
It does.
Okay, so it wasn't postpartum psychosis. You've never written about postpartum psychosis, right?
That's right.
Okay. So, finally, sir, would you agree, and if you don't, just say, no, I don't agree. Postpartum depression. Are there tests that can be administered to? I'm not talking about a guy who's upset about his job. I'm talking about a woman who's just had a baby, who's going through the postpartum period, exhibiting signs of depression and or psychosis. Okay?
Yes.
All right. Would you agree with me? A person can complain that they're less able to laugh or see the funny side of their life. Is that a symptom, sir, if you know?
Are you asking me if that's a symptom of postpartum depression specifically or depression more generally?
Oh, no, I'm asking you about postpartum depression, sir. That's what I'm talking about right now.
All right.
Okay. Do you agree that a patient would complain that they're less able to laugh and see the funny side of life?
That's a symptom of depression.
All right, you're going to tell me it's a symptom of depression constantly. My question is, do you agree that it's a symptom of postpartum depression?
Yes.
Okay. Not looking forward to things.
And let me just say...
Oh, no, I don't want to let you do anything. Can you just tell me if stopping looking forward to things is a complaint that is common to postpartum depression?
Yes.
Anxious and worried for no good reason.
Yes.
And Lindsay complained of anxiety and being worried for no good reason constantly, right?
Yes.
She blamed herself for a lot of things in her life. Isn't that right?
She did, yes.
And she was not looking forward to the future. She was not happy with her life in the sense of the way she felt and wanted to go back to the way she was, right?
That's right.
How about complain? When I say complain, I don't mean complaining. It's just that's a language you guys use. Complained about overwhelmed. Her day is overwhelming.
Yes.
So unhappy that she would cry constantly.
Yes.
Sad and miserable.
Yes.
Thoughts of harming herself, which is, according to the Mass Department of Mental Health, a flag in and of itself. She had thoughts of harming herself, right?
She did.
Okay. So those are all of the postpartum depression symptoms that a person can have, according to Mass General Hospital's 3-year review of postpartum depression and psychosis. So she hit all of these symptoms, right?
Those are symptoms of postpartum depression. They're also symptoms of depression.
I don't
broadly.
Care what the, I'm asking you, sir. Are they symptoms of postpartum depression?
Yes.
All right. And there's a tool that psychologists can use with a woman who's coming to a doctor for help because of the symptoms of postpartum depression. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what is that tool?
I don't know what the tool is, but I'm sure there is a measure of it, yes, of okay. postpartum depression.
Okay. Have you ever used that measure?
I have not.
Have you ever read about it?
Possibly.
Do you even know what it is?
I don't know what it is.
How about postpartum psychosis, sir? Same study. Hearing voices or a voice commanding a person to act. That's in the DSM, right?
Yes. Okay. Command hallucinations, yes.
Delusional beliefs or distorted reality is a symptom that a person can complain of, right?
Delusional beliefs,
yes. Yeah, it's just next statement. Confused, disorganized thinking. She had that, right? It's in your report, I think, that she was baking or making a pie or something and forgot where she was.
She was having trouble with memory, attention, and concentration.
All right. Anxious and worried for no good. Strike that. Apologize. Severe sleep deprivation. She had that, right?
Yes.
Rapid mood swings. She had that, right?
Not sure she had that.
Well, how about the time that Patrick told you that she would repeatedly find herself in the living room on the sofa and bury her head in the pillow and rock back and forth, crying hysterically?
When you said mood swings, that implies that at one moment you're feeling down and sad and depressed, and in another moment you're feeling quite differently. So
right.
I don't see
took
that the
kids
mood swings she had.
Oh, all right. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Doctor.
Yeah, I don't see that she was experiencing mood swings so much as she was experiencing symptoms of sadness and feeling down and lack of motivation, which are symptoms of depression.
What is akathisia? A-K-A-S-T-H-E-S-I-A, I believe.
Yeah, I'd have to look that one up.
Okay. Feeling overwhelmed. She felt overwhelmed?
She did, yes.
Not herself, family seeing the change? Obviously. Right.
Repeat the question, please.
Yeah, not herself. Semicolon. Family seeing the change.
Yes, correct.
Right. Lord knows. I mean, the mother-in-law, the father-in-law, her mother, her father, her husband, neighbors, people could see the change in her, right?
Yes, they could.
Okay. Continuing on with postpartum psychosis. Not herself. Thoughts of harming her children. That's a big red flag, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Thoughts of suicide. She complained of that, right?
Correct.
Poor insight. She had poor insight at the end of January, didn't she?
I would not say she had poor insight. No, I think she understood pretty much where she was and the difficulty she was having and was aware of a number of things about that.
So I have, Your Honor. Thank you.
Trudy Sprague.
Thank you, Your Honor. Doctor, those symptoms that Attorney Reddington just read you about postpartum depression, are those also symptoms for general depression?
They're symptoms for general depression. They are, to some extent, symptoms of major depression, which is a more extreme example, a more extreme version of general depression. And there are also symptoms of bipolar disorder and bipolar 2. And I thought at the end of this evaluation that her correct diagnosis was bipolar 2.
And why was that?
One of the reasons, as I testified yesterday, is that she has been in Tewksbury for 3.5 years. And that is her diagnosis of record, bipolar disorder. But what that indicates to me is that having had the chance to see her, prescribe medications, and do a number of things, that they really think that that she has a mood disorder of a fluctuating kind, a bipolar sort, as opposed to a major depression or some other kind of disorder.
Now, you were asked by defense counsel about the fact that you interviewed Ms. Clancy 3 years, a little over 3 years after she killed her children. And your testimony was it's better to interview the person as soon as possible, right?
Correct.
But you were able to watch Dr. Resnick's interview of the defendant about three and a half months after the incident happened, correct?
Yes.
And you were able to review all of her records leading up to when she killed the children, and then after she killed the children, all the way up to present day, correct?
Yes.
Is that something that you typically have when you do these forensic reviews, that much information, medical history and information on a patient?
I had more records information in this case than I have ever had in my career.
And so, also, were you aware that you weren't allowed to interview the defendant until the court gave permission?
I really wasn't. I didn't know how the process worked.
But as soon as you were informed that you could meet with the defendant, you did, correct?
Yes.
And the fact that you had all of these resources, the records, the prior interviews, the recorded interviews of witnesses, the criminal file, the collateral interviews that you did that in any way aid you in overcoming whatever deficits you might have had in interviewing her 3 years later?
It did, yes.
And how so?
Because of how extensive the records were from different people, different observations, different times, and so on, they, in effect, created something that I would have tried to do myself if there had been fewer records available. So I would have tried, for example, to...
I'm going to object to what he would have done.
No, overruled.
I would have tried to conduct a number of collateral interviews. I would have tried to go out and get some of the records myself if they'd not been available and provided to me. Usually I have to work a lot harder to get 10% of the records that I had in this case.
And you were provided with her complete psychiatric history from September through present day, correct?
I was.
Now, you were asked about being retained by our office and speaking to the prosecutors in the case. Did anyone from my office or myself or Ms. Buckingham ever tell you what your decision or what your evaluation should say in this case?
No.
And did we ever put any pressure on you in any way, shape, or form to come out on what defense counsel calls our side?
No.
And he also asked you about your interview itself with the defendant. At any point in time, was your conversation with Ms. Clancy hostile or aggressive or rude in any way?
No.
Did she ever ask you to stop and say she couldn't do it any longer?
She did not.
In fact, she declined a break at one point in time, correct?
For one of the days, yes. That was the third day.
Prior to reading the records in this case, did you form an opinion as to what her criminal responsibility was?
No. In fact, I worked very hard to avoid forming any kind of opinion until very late in the process when I'd had the chance to go through all the records, do the 3 days of evaluation, do the collateral interviews, and get everything I could have, because that's the kind of thing that helps you handle what's been referred to as confirmation bias, which is starting out with a good idea or a conclusion and then being drawn to the things that support that and avoiding the things that don't.
Would an example of confirmation bias be giving a press conference in which you diagnose a patient before you even do an evaluation of that patient? And then finding that same diagnosis that you initially made?
Well, an example of that would be saying before you had ever met with somebody that I have a diagnosis, and then meeting with them, and then possibly resulting in your providing that diagnosis. So it could well be an influence of associated with confirmation bias.
Now, you were asked about the defendant telling you that she didn't like to leave the children and how that was, how that impacted your evaluation of the defendant. And I think you were cut off on your answer. So if you could just tell us why, what you saw in terms of, or heard from the defendant in terms of her not wanting to leave her children and how that impacted or influenced your evaluation.
That was an important consideration.
Objection. It's not responsive.
No, I'll go ahead.
If you could answer.
Yeah. That was an important consideration because one of the things that would go through your mind if you decided to take your own life would be something very important to you, like your children. And over a number of years and in a number of different
ways. Sorry?
This is way outside the scope of cross-examination.
No, I would allow this. Go ahead.
Proceed.
Over a number of years and in a number of different contexts, she didn't like to leave the kids. So the question might be if you were possibly inclined to think about taking your own life, what would happen with the kids? And would they suffer without you? And could other people take care of them? And that turned out to be something that I thought was consistent with not wanting to leave your kids and not wanting them to suffer and so on. It all went together in how she thought about her own kids, felt about her own kids.
You were also asked by defense counsel in cross-examination about the defendant's concerns about taking Zoloft while breastfeeding. Do you recall in your interview with the defendant when she mentioned that as a result of her practice in labor and delivery as a nurse, she was aware that millions of pregnant women and postpartum women took Zoloft with no problem?
I do not recall that, no.
But that would be in your interview if it happened?
Yes.
Now, defense counsel asked you about your answer from direct testimony about all of the prescriptions and the different doctors being confusing. But being confusing was your description of the of seeing all that information, not the defendant's description, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And could you explain that and how it was confusing in what way?
She had a number of diagnoses that people assigned to her, a number of symptoms. And one of the things that she experienced is that people were saying that she had something pretty minor, adjustment disorder with anxiety or adjustment disorder with mild depression or things like that, all the way up to things that were really major and really severe, postpartum psychosis, that sort of thing. And there were a number of things in between. So she was not sure what they were saying, and she was not sure whether they were prescribing the right medication for her. And even if it was something that she experienced, whether she was reacting badly to that medication. So so that's basically my understanding, that there were a lot of things that people said, mental health care providers. Some of them were pretty minor as far as what was wrong with her, and some of them were not minor.
And in terms of the defendant being unsure about the effects the medication was having on her, she expressed a specific concern about Seroquel, correct?
Yes.
And what was her concern about Seroquel?
It was giving her big problems with sleeping, and she thought that part of the numbness and not being able to feel and that sort of thing was associated with that medication as well. So she thought it was really affecting her badly.
And after she went to McLean Hospital, she was no longer on any of those medications that she had been on from September through December, correct?
Correct.
And she had been weaned off the Seroquel in particular, correct?
Yes.
And so after leaving McLean Hospital, the two medications she was on upon discharge was Trazodone and Valium, correct?
Yes.
Now, you were asked about thought broadcasting and the defendant thinking that people could hear her thoughts. And you said that there was some difference there between thought broadcasting and what the defendant explained to you was happening. Could you tell us what she said to you in your interview and how that impacted your evaluation?
Yes, she said that they were thoughts. They were unwelcome and intrusive thoughts, but they were thoughts just like many people would have. And if they were particularly insistent or they were particularly vivid thoughts, then you might think that, oh, people can pick this up from what I'm experiencing. But that is not a psychotic symptom, having vivid thoughts. On the other hand, if you hear a voice like somebody might hear my voice, it's an external sort of a thing, then that is very likely a psychotic symptom. And so I tried to ask her to describe the difference between the two and specify whether it was an external voice, which would have been an hallucination, or an internal thought, which would have been an unwelcome intrusive thought. And she said, except for on January 24th, what she was experiencing were thoughts rather than hallucinations.
So internal thoughts versus external auditory hallucinations. Is that right?
Yes.
Now, defense counsel asked you if before all of these medications and before all the treatment, if Lindsay Clancy was a happy woman. But didn't she go to Dr. Tufts in the first place because she was struggling?
She was anxious about returning to work. She had been having a very good time with her family that summer, but as the fall approached and Patrick's paternity leave expired and she was thinking about returning to work and scheduled to return to work, that made her anxious.
And so it's not as if Dr. Tufts went to her home randomly and handed her a prescription. She actually went to Dr. Tufts with some mental health concerns and Dr. Tufts treated her, correct?
Yes.
And from your review of the records and from everything that you've learned in this case, including your interviews with her, is it accurate that Ms. Clancy never told any of her providers, any of her medical providers or any of the hospitals that she visited, that she had thoughts of harming her children?
That is my recollection, that she did not share that information with any mental health providers.
And in your review of the records for Dr. Tufts, nurse practitioner Delotta, mental health workers Letitia Dukes, and also at McLean Hospital, isn't it true, isn't it accurate, that in all of those records, it indicates that the defendant denied suicidal ideation, denied homicidal ideation, denied auditory hallucinations, denied visual hallucinations, except for saying that she felt suicidal in December?
Yes, that is accurate.
And isn't it accurate that throughout those records, they all document, all those providers document that there are no signs or symptoms of psychosis that are either observable or that she reported?
Yes, that is accurate.
Now, you were asked about her visit to women and infants in Rhode Island, and defense counsel asked you if they refused to help her and told her to leave. But they did offer to help her, didn't they? They offered her three different programs. Isn't that correct?
Yes, they referred her elsewhere to programs that they thought were more appropriate for what was wrong with her.
And reading from page 9 of Exhibit 220 in the records, it states, currently she is complaining of insomnia and mental numbness, which she attributes to taking Seroquel. She desires to down titrate the Seroquel and work on getting better sleep. Because her symptoms occurred late in postpartum period and are not clearly related to perinatal factors, the patient was advised that the WIH-DHP, which would be the Women and Infants Hospital postpartum program, is not a suitable treatment facility for her. This was discussed with both patient and husband, and both are in agreement with this. Patient's husband feels strongly that patient has been over-medicated and misdiagnosed. Patient was offered several options for her, including inpatient treatment for medication management, a partial hospitalization program focused on general mental health, or continued outpatient management. Patient plans to follow up with her outpatient provider for guidance, correct?
Yes.
And so it was Patrick who said that she was over-medicated, correct?
Well, he was one of the two of them who said that. She also thought that she was over-medicated.
But the people at Women and Infants Hospital, the ones who are doing the evaluation, don't say in their diagnosis that she was over-medicated. They list adverse drug effects, correct?
They listed rule out adverse drug effects.
And what does it mean when they write in a diagnosis, rule out adverse drug effects?
It means it's possible, but it has yet to be confirmed.
And there's nowhere in the diagnosis any doctor or mental health professional saying that she was, in fact, over-medicated, correct? In the diagnosis portion here.
Oh, of women and infants?
Yes, I'm sorry, women and infants.
Yes, I did not see anything like that.
And is there a difference between being over-medicated and having adverse drug effects?
Well, I think you're asking a medical question right now, and I'm a psychologist, not a medical professional, so I don't think I'm going to answer that.
Okay. Now, in the diagnosis, you stated earlier that there was general anxiety disorder, correct?
Among the diagnoses, yes.
And depression unspecified, rule out due to adverse drug effects, correct?
Yes.
So that means depression, but you have to look further into it to rule out or rule in whether or not the medication is having an effect.
Yes.
So that's not sure. That's not saying she's depressed because of the medication, correct?
They were just saying it's possible. Need to look into it.
And in this, what I just read to you, the defendant was telling them that she thought it was the Seroquel and she wanted to titrate down, meaning slowly go off of the medication, correct?
Yes.
And then she went to Dr. Tufts after this and to Nurse Practitioner Gelada, and Nurse Practitioner Gelada actually gave her a prescription to titrate down, correct?
Yes.
Exactly what the defendant was looking for, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
You were asked by defense counsel about the defendant getting worse and worse and worse. But was that between September and December, or was that in January?
It didn't begin until October when she began taking the medication. And she seemed to get worse and worse into November and December. And then following her discharge from McLean on January 5th, she seemed to be somewhat improved in different ways, including her sleep was better and her mood was slightly better and things like that. So if I had to describe it, it was worse from October into November into December and then somewhat better and somewhat improving in January.
And you were asked by defense counsel about, you had mentioned cognitive behavioral therapy might be something that someone would look into, and he asked you if that was on the patient to do that, correct?
Yes, I think that's right.
Were you aware that there are searches on the defendant's cell phone where she looked up cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT therapy?
Yes.
And so she was actively engaging in her treatment and looking up that type of therapy, correct?
That was one of a number of things that she was searching for information on and looking for, yes.
And despite searching for information on it and looking for, she never made an appointment, to your knowledge, for that type of therapy?
To my knowledge, she did not.
You were asked about peritraumatic disassociation, about how a person feels outside of their body watching what they're doing. Did I describe that accurately?
Yes.
And in that scenario where someone might be experiencing that during a traumatic event, does that mean they're not in control of what they're doing?
No, it doesn't mean that. It means it kind of influences their perception and their memory and so on, but it doesn't completely remove their self-control.
You were asked about psychosis and whether someone in psychosis would automatically act on a command hallucination, and you said, and not be responsible, and you said it depends. Yes. Is that correct?
Yes.
Why does it depend?
Because symptoms of psychosis, including command hallucinations, don't necessarily take away your knowledge, your understanding, or your self-control. They can in some instances, but in other instances, they don't. And one of the things that people do to try to retain more control is things like distracting themselves, praying, doing other things that that basically make a difference in terms of supporting and boosting their self-control. And so there's no automatic connection between any mental disorder, including psychotic mental disorders, and the legal standard for knowing that something is wrong or conforming one's conduct to the requirements of the law. That's why we go through all this in such detail.
Next question.
Doctor, can someone who is experiencing psychosis with a command hallucination, can that person know the difference between right and wrong?
Yes.
It's outside, way outside the scope of questions. Yeah.
Right. Next question.
And can someone who is experiencing psychosis conform their behavior to the law?
Same objection.
No. Overall.
In some cases, they can, yes.
And is that what you were talking about just a few moments ago, when someone can be in a state of psychosis, hearing a command telling them to do something, and they try to avoid doing what they're told to do?
Yes.
And you gave some examples, but someone trying to distract themselves with music or something like that, correct?
Yes.
I'm going to stop objecting, but I have a standing objection to the leading judge. This is my objection.
All right. It's redirect. I'll allow the Commonwealth to use a leading question to direct the witness to a certain area of inquiry, and then you just non-leading questions at that point.
Okay. I have nothing further. Thank you.
All right.
Well, things, sir. First of all, counsel was asking you a question about the inconsistent statement or what have you. You indicated, sir, if I stand corrected, you administered a test, the MMPI, to her, right?
Yes, I did.
And one of the sub
category. Beyond the scope.
No, she asked about inconsistent statements.
Oh, yeah, overall.
Is the K scale or the lie scale, right? Yes or no? Just please, yes or no.
The MMPI does have a K scale.
Okay.
And it does have an L scale.
That measures if a person, to you, as the administering psychologist, is bluntly lying, right?
No.
Okay. Does it also, in your testing, determine if the person is exaggerating their symptoms?
Yes, it's okay. Much closer
yes.
to that.
This is yes, thank you. And when you administered the test to Lindsay, close to 3 years later, you indicated that it was the fact that it was late that you administered the test. It was testing her at the time it was administered, right?
That's right.
And one of the things that, the results, by the way, if I understand, looking at your transcript of testimony, is regardless of all of your explanations about MMPI and the other psychological testing, she was not elevated on anything except for suicide scale, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So she wasn't, according to the testing you administered when you saw her with Mac, exaggerating, lying, malingering, anything like that, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And one of the things that you did in your report, sir, is regarding the lying or the malingering, is you made reference to, I believe, Dr. Resnick, Philip Resnick. You know him, right?
I do.
He's a significant authority in the field of filicide. Is that right?
He is.
And Dr. Resnick indicated, sir, that his opinion as to the lack of malingering, and as well as yours, right?
Yes, he did.
Okay. And you made reference to one of Dr. Resnick's articles, actually, in your report, correct?
Some of his research on
The answer's yes. We can make this easy. The answer's yes. Did you look at and cite Dr. Philip Resnick's research report?
His research. Yes, okay. I did.
And are you aware, sir, that what you cited is outdated? Are you familiar with the 2012 article by Dr. McCarthy Jones collaborating with Dr. Resnick talking about the largest study of hallucinations ever conducted in the world?
I'm aware that as a researcher, you build on some of the
things.
No,
not what researchers do. Are you aware of that report?
No.
Okay. Are you aware, sir, that that study was after the report that you cited in your report, and it involved 191 individuals who were asked almost 400 questions about auditory hallucinations? You aware of that?
No.
And are you aware, sir, that in fact it was determined that auditory hallucinations can come from within and it can come from without in that report? You're not aware of that, right?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Only other thing, there's been a lot of talk about how you had to wait, took a while. You had to get court orders to visit with Lindsay to conduct your investigation, right?
Yes.
Okay. You're not suggesting or trying to leave with this jury that it was me or my office that interfered or impeded. I think the question was that you were unable to see her. I had nothing to do with that, right?
Objection. No sidebar?
No.
Yeah, come on.
Further questions, Your Honor?
Commonwealth?
No.
All right, thank you, Doc. You may sit down. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
More live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy is on the way. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.